Hello and welcome to the first of a new series of shows sponsored by Dublin City Comics and Collectibles, where we, the Full Force, take an in-depth look at the old Action Force comics in no particular order. I am Chris McLeod, aka Diagnostic 80, and joining me on this first episode, and also the man that's done most of the legwork for this show, is Brian Legwork Hickey. So let's get on with it, shall we? Of course, there's an explosion. First, some background to Action Force and Battle Weekly. In 1982, Palitoy launched their own 3¾-inch toy line called Action Force. The first generation figures were based on real-world military characters, both historic and contemporary, but in 1983 the line evolved into the distinct units of Z-Force, SAS Force, Space Force, Q-Force, and the Enemy, giving us the Action Force that we know and love today. The original lineup of 5-point of articulation figures had its own designs, characters, and fictional canon, and was not connected to G.I. Joe. These figures utilised a lot of existing tooling from the first generation, but did include some new designs worked in with retooled parts.
Over time, G.I. Joe figures and vehicles were slowly introduced to fill out the ranks, and by 1985, the third generation of Action Force kicked in, with the full G.I. Joe suite of characters being introduced. The original AF continuity was carried through, however, and the new G.I. Joe and Cobra characters were woven into the existing Action Force universe.
Battle, first published in March 1975 by IPC Magazines, was a weekly comic that featured World War II themed action and adventure stories. This became the platform to market Action Force to young boys.
The Action Force characters originally guest featured in a comic strip serial in Battle for 4 weeks in July 1983. The strip proved to be so popular that a further 5 promotional mini-comics were included free with every IPC publication in the weeks to follow. On the 8th of October 1983, Action Force joined the pages of Battle full-time and the comic was retitled Battle Action Force.
And so begins our Battle Action Force themed series of comic reviews.
Choosing stories in no particular order, we kickstart our review with a look at Sea Fury! Originally published in Battle Action Force in 1984, the credits include writer James Nicholas, who's done a lot of work with Eagle and some work with Battle as well. Artist Robert Turner, possibly the Rob Turner from Action Comic Adventures from 1940.
Which would be amazing if it is.
Which would be awesome if it was, yes.
We need some confirmation on that, but yeah, that would be epic.
Actually, yeah, and if anybody knows, we would love to hear. Love to hear. And the letters on this particular series is Peter Knight and John Aldridge.
The cast in this particular belter of a comic: Q-Force Commander Jamie McLaren, codename Leviathan. Q-Force Sonar Officer Patrick O'Flaherty, codename Paddy. No, codename Phones. Q-Force Aqua Trooper Jean-Paul Reeves, codename Shark. Q-Force Vehicle Swordfish, Baron Ironblood, the Black Major, many Red Shadows, and many Red Shadow Frogmen, which I love the design of these Frogmen, and I can't wait to kind of like get into how cool they look.
This quick story synopsis. Action Force's nautical unit Q-Force are sent to the South Atlantic to investigate the disappearance of a number of warships. After finding a destroyer stripped of its weaponry on the seabed, the Q-Force team are captured by Red Shadow Frogmen. They are taken to Baron Ironblood's secret new battle cruiser.
Okay, so while we're at this stage of the Red Shadows stripping the weaponry from this destroyer, I love the fact they just trounce into it. Like, so if in reality you were going to strip a battle cruiser of its weaponry, you'd do it while it was like active, wouldn't you? You wouldn't do it while it was like buried underwater, like damaged and broken and messed up, because you might have damaged all of the weapons.
Well, you know, in a classic Bond movie, your battle cruiser would have jaws that could open up at the front. The whole front of the ship would open up and it would just swallow the destroyer whole and, you know, keep it intact. And then you could disarm the crew and dismantle everything, you know, all within the confines of your ship.
Exactly.
Well, Baron Ironblood is totally insane. So he just decides to ram the ship.
Cleaves through it.
And so what if it's a big mess at the bottom of the ocean? Send Red Shadow Frogmen to their doom.
Oh, the, sh- Dude, those frogmen are incredible, aren't they? I mean, I'm flashing images up as we're going, but it's such a cool design. And then to have like the Red Shadows, I love how they got the Red Shadows logos on the helmet and on the arms, like on their shoulders. They look so cool. We need to get this out there and see some cool customs of Red Shadow Frogmen, because that's something that I just don't think I've seen done yet.
They probably only ever featured in this strip, and they have a brief cameo, so it's easy to understand how they could have been overlooked. You know, history, they could just be passed by in the history of Action Force. And of course, we never got a toy, which I think is a real missed opportunity. And this is pre having the Kraken action figure, so that would have, you know, the Kraken would have been Iron Bloods.
You could say Kraction figure. Sorry, that was bad.
That's a good one. But that would have been Iron Bloods. Underwater forces would have been the Kraken and maybe Mutant. But this is before the Kraken would have been introduced into the toy line. So yeah, the writer was improvising here with his own kind of underwater troopers. But I mean, what a design. You've got this beefed up helmet with this really weird kind of breather mask. The eyepieces replicate the shape of kind of the bones on a skull, on the jaws on the skull. And they look pretty ominous. To see them coming at you out of the deep will be pretty scary.
And I think this was the first time I really kind of got into Q-Force like properly. Like, you know, I had a couple of the toys, like literally that kind of like base of operations, and it was like, it's amazing. Like, I loved it, but I didn't really understand it until I started reading the comics. And this was my first kind of introduction to see that, oh, hang on, Shark's French. I didn't know that. That's pretty cool. So, yeah. And because I got the toys in a slightly different way. It was almost like hand-me-downs from like a next-door neighbor. So when I was really young, they gave us this box of toys, and it just had a ton of Action Force figures in it. And they're the only ones I had for a while, because by the time I was old enough to really start getting into it, it was like we're into 80, you know, 5, 86, 87, and you know, G.I. Joe figures are kind of starting to creep in. The Action Force Hasbro stuff getting in like 87. And that's when so it was only really reading the comics that I got any kind of, you know, backstory for it all. Anyway.
In the opening color spread of this comic, we get to see the Swordfish. And it's a vehicle that maybe as a kid, I was more into the military figures like Z-Force, SAS Force, you know, the ones closer to modern military figures.
Yeah.
Looking back now, over 34 years later, or is it 40 years later? I'm not sure.
Closing in.
That Swordfish, the Q4 Swordfish vehicle, looks absolutely amazing. And I was tempted to go on eBay today and see if there's any out there. And there are. And before this podcast is over, I may actually have made a purchase.
Amazing.
But that aesthetic is fantastic. I will say that Jean-Paul Reeves, or Shark, his figure in the story doesn't look anything like his actual action figure.
No.
And the artist obviously felt, didn't feel constrained to follow the design of the toy to maximize dramatic impact for, you know, some of those underwater battle scenes.
Yeah, totally. So, moving through the comic, upon learning of Iron Blood's latest insane plan to take over the world by destroying its merchant navy, Q-Force's commander manages to escape, then later returns to the battlecruiser to free his comrades.
So McLaren succeeds in rescuing his Q-Force crew, and all three escape from the Baron's battlecruiser to a nearby island. The Black Major is dispatched to bring them back, dead or alive.
Why did they ever mess around with alive? I never really understood that. The Red Shadows were, I mean, there was so much death in the Action Force comics. There's always some death in them. And I feel like they just, obviously they didn't want to kill their characters, the main characters, because it would prevent sales, or it would, like, you know, annoy people or whatever. And it was before the time when that kind of shock value of killing a major character was really, you know, employed every 20 minutes. But I feel like they just always found ways of avoiding killing Action Force characters and killed everything else. They even, but the Black Mage and Baron Ironblood even kill their own men on regular, like in regular panels. And it's like, damn, they're so quick to kill their own men. And yet when they're standing there in front of like captured Action Force guys, they're like, we're going to tell you our entire plan. And then you're never going to get off this alive, but you might do because we haven't thought of that yet.
You see a lot of that, particularly with the main characters. You would find with maybe with the Z Force stories, there's a lot of green shirts in the Z Force crew, and invariably
infantry have been destroyed.
They all get wiped out. But there's always, you know, Skip and Wheels and maybe Steeler always still manage to kind of
squeeze
battle
out
through.
What's interesting, when Dave did his panel at JoeCon about 2 or 3 years ago, probably longer than that now, he actually put up it was almost like a tally chart. He'd gone through and counted all of the deaths in Action Force. And I think Z-Force was in like the hundreds. I think Z-Force had taken so many like hits over the years. I think the Red Shadows were up there too. A lot of them had been killed, but that's because they're killed by their own friggin' men. But anyway, yes.
There's a great panel actually just as in this particular comic.
Oh yeah.
When the Black Major and the Red Shadows disembark from their rafts onto the island to search for Q-Force, Rob Turner's drawn one of the most iconic images of the Red Shadows. Because this is when you do a search for Red Shadows on Google, this is the first image that comes up every time.
Yeah.
And it's they're running up the beach. You can see the waves kind of lapping at their feet. And they just, it's an incredible action shot. The Red Shadows are kind of leaning over there. They look like AK-47s with these huge kind of night scopes on them.
Yeah.
And the Black Major, you know, giving them orders to kind of spread out.
Spread out further, men! Yeah, it looks amazing. And yeah, that has been utilised so many times as like a Red Shadow kind of image. In fact, I'm surprised you haven't recreated this in your photographic skill set. I feel like you need to do this at some point, Brian.
I feel like I need to do this also.
Stop the recording.
Pause.
Okay, so the Q-Force crew manage to evade the Black Major's search party and return to the Baron's ship with the intention of destroying it. In the process of planting a bomb, classic, McLaren falls into a trap set by Ironblood and ends up having to face off against a great white shark.
Absolutely love this. I mean, it's totally Bond-esque bad guy, keeping a pet great white inside the bowels of your battlecruiser.
Epic.
And you know, a McLaren, he just happens to have a handy grenade that he stole off of Red Shadow. So it's job done. Job done. The Great White is no more. And McLaren's crewmates, well, we can read on and see what happens then. So ultimately, Q-Force prevail, and the Baron's insane plot to take over the world by destroying its merchant navy are brought to an end. Our story ends with Ironblood swearing vengeance on Action Force. And that is a promise.
I love that. It's the classic shaking the fist bad guy move at the end, isn't it? I love that. I swear here and now that I will have my revenge on Q-Force for ruining my plans. That is a promise. It's like, it's almost like Alan Partridge, just like at the end, just waving his... In fact, Steve Coogan should be Baron Ironblood if ever portrayed in film or television.
That would be amazing.
That'd be great, wouldn't it?
That would be amazing.
I'll bloody get you, Action Force, you...
and that is a promise.
I must admit though, like in terms of like the story and everything, it's cute. It's got like the classic kind of, I don't know, like trope, but it's got that kind of its time, the 80s. The good guys are kind of like stepping in to try to, like, you know, investigate some wrongdoing that's happened. They all get kind of captured, one of them escapes, comes back and saves them all. Then they get in another scrape, and it's just like that. And then, you know, oh, you've ruined my plans at the end of it all, you b***ed. So I do love this one. I think it's like a real classic Battle Action Force story. And the art is just so amazing. I love it.
Rob Turner's art actually is awesome. And he's probably one of the Action Force artists that I've overlooked. And I tend to refer to people like St. John Cooper or Vanyo in terms of my favourite artists. Yeah. But looking at this particular story in a lot more detail, Rob Turner's work is superb on this one. It really is. It's great. I did notice, though, on the credits, they just credit art and then the artist's name. They don't spread it out into pencillers, inkers, or colorists.
Yeah.
So I wonder, was that part of the, you know, the British comic industry, that maybe the artists did everything themselves?
Possibly. Either that, or they didn't really think it was worth mentioning those other stages, which has been the case for many years in the comic industry. Like, inkers and letterers, you know, like those kind of aspects have always been very much, well, you know, back in the day anyway, not so much nowadays, but like back then, kind of like looked on as not like, you know, even if you watch the movie, Chasing Amy. If you watch the movie Chasing Amy, it kind of revolves around this story of Ben Affleck and Jason Lee, who are comic creators. They create their own comic, Bluntman and Chronic. In the actual kind of, you know, there's a bunch of times that Jason Lee is kind of like picked on for only being an inker. And like, it's kind of like very much like a thing in like that time as well. It's like the guy comes up to me and says, so you made, you know, they're at a convention. He's like, so you made a comic, yeah? And he's like, yeah. So what did you do on it? Are you the artist? He says, oh no, I ink it. And he says, oh, right. So not really. And he kind of really looked down on it. And it's always been a bit of like an in joke, but in reality, an inker will make or break, like, just like a colorist. Like the artist can make something that is absolutely out of this world and you think that is beautiful, and bad inking and bad coloring can really ruin it massively. Make
absolutely
such a difference that you get that. So those stages, I think nowadays people realize that it's actually quite an important stage, because like even the thickness of certain lines and how things are drawn with the, like, you know, when you're inking that drawing, need to be spot on.
For sure. And the thing with inking as well, there's actually different styles that you can take. It's not as if you take two different inker artists,
yeah,
they could take the same set of pencils, ink it up, and you can end up with two very different looking pieces of artwork. So it is an art form in and of itself, and rightly they should be credited.
Yeah, and I'm either thinking it was one of those things where they just didn't think it was necessary back then, or the artist just did everything.
I hope it's a case that the artist did everything, because I think that's a better outcome than thinking that skilled people just didn't get a credit for the great work they were doing.
If that's the case, I'm just going to go ahead and say I inked it when I was like 3 or 4 or 5 years old.
The child labour laws were a lot more lax back in the 80s.
I know, and I was a really good inker, as you can see. I'll have to say no, I didn't do that, because some people will be like, really? I don't think they will. But yeah, I mean, I love these comics. And another thing I'd like to mention is the fact that when I was younger and I was reading comics, Battle Action Force was one of those things that I definitely matured into. When I was a kid, it was kind of past me reading comics. Like, it was already gone, that era. So the whole black and white with a few color strips, you know, was the thing of the past by the time I was reading comics. It was like full ink, full color. You know, and there was always a big thing about it. There's always like be like a splash logo on the front saying full color, you know, like 58 page comic full color, and it's like, oh, okay, like you just, you know, took it for granted really. So going back and reading some of these, and you're going to go into Battle and it's like, or the open spread page or the cover is in color, and you're like, oh, this is gorgeous. And then you get into the black and white and you're kind of like, oh, and you kind of, it does take something away, but I kind of like that a little bit more now that I'm a little bit older and, you know, in the tooth, and kind of can appreciate it more. And obviously back then color printing was super expensive, or printing any of that stuff in color was, so they had to do it that way in order to kind of, you know, to actually be able to do it. You know, I can totally understand that, and that's where I suppose technology has come along and made it easier for and cheaper for companies to kind of produce full color prints.
It's amazing how technology has kind of transformed the comic book industries. But like, as I've said many times, you know, on the show, I absolutely love that kind of vintage looking aesthetic that comes with the black and white art. And it's about part of the, you know, bringing it back to the ink artist. It's what makes this artwork really shine is the quality of the ink work that's applied to the pencils.
Yeah.
Because that's all they had. They couldn't rely on color to, you know, for all of the stories. It was the front cover, the back cover, and the inside spread. That was it. And you might have 32 pages in the whole comic. So that, you know, 28 pages were going to be black and white. So the pencils and ink work had to be excellent to sell that. The story-wise, you know, they knew the market were, you know, boys between age, you know, maybe 9 and 13. So the stories are, you know, they're not, compared to today's writing, maybe they don't always hold up. You get a, you know, the bad guys are very predictable.
Yeah.
And you know, and they tend to monologue when they should be taking the good guys out when they have the chance. But visually, it's absolutely stunning work. And, you know, I would say that some of this artwork holds up for sure against some of today's full color work that we see.
Agreed. I'd also like to say that, yeah, we talked about them at the beginning, but the frogmen are just so cool. And I really need to see that in a custom, like, big time.
I would love to see that. I might be hitting up the Marauder website in the coming weeks to see what they've got there.
Yep.
It's a missed opportunity. We never got that figure. We got some great figures, obviously, from Palazzoy. But now that I've kind of seen the Red Shadow Frogman, and he looks so awesome, thanks to Rob Turner, I'd love to see that figure.
Coolsies. So we will be doing more of these cool little kind of episode, cool little kind of comic issue reviews over the next, I don't know, forever. It's going to take a while because there's a lot of stories, and we're doing them we're not doing them in any kind of order either. So when you've finally collected all of our podcasts, you can put them in the right order and listen to them in the in the right way. That's why we called it Disorder of Battle, because you know, puns. Anywho,
one last thing to say, the layout work on the pages. Well, it's one of these things that I've noticed consistently with the Action Force stories in Battle Action Force.
Really interesting.
They tend to. They really try to break up the grid with, you know, kind of overlapping panels and, you know, these kind of explosive cutouts.
Yeah. Like the star wipe I liked. That's kind of like whereas as they're discussing the crash of the, you know, of the two ships, is that kind of like, yeah, you're right, that kind of explosive, like spiky surround, which I think is really cute. Yeah, I love that.
You see, it's kind of common to all of the Action Force stories, regardless of who's credited as the artist. And that's making me think that perhaps there was somebody, you know, working on layouts for all of these stories over, you know, the 3 or 4 years of the run of the comic, probably working in an incredibly high pressure environment.
Oh, yeah.
And they're relying on the same kind of style for the layout over and over and over again.
No doubt this wouldn't be the only thing they'd be working on as well. So it would be like one of many.
Oh, yeah. They would be literally, it's almost, I was going to say color by numbers, but obviously in black and white.
Black and white by numbers. that's amazing. Yeah, okay, so that's it for this installment of Disorder of Battle. Thank you to my co-host Brian Hickey and to our sponsors Dublin City Comics and Collectibles. See you next time, and as always, full force. Make sure you get involved with the discussion by liking, sharing and commenting on these videos, and as always, you can keep up with the show after listening by following on Twitter at The Full Force, liking the Facebook page facebook.com/TheFullForce, and if you would like to contact the show, you can message us on either of these platforms with feedback, questions or to say, who do you think you are? A serious operation now? No, not even close. Look out for more of these news bursts that we are posting on the Facebook page from now on. Full Force. And a big shout out to our sponsors, Dublin City Comics and Collectibles. Located at 46 Bolton Street, Inns Quay, Dublin 1, Ireland, you can visit their website at dublincitycomics.ie and on Facebook at facebook.com/DublinCityComics.